The following program represents the views of the speakers and not necessarily those of KCBX. KCBX welcomes the comments of those with divergent views. Our phone number for today is 805-549-8855. Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program to address the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Fred Monroe is hosting the program from today while practicing state and county recommendations during the COVID-19 virus. His guests will be joining by phone and Zoom today. We're going to be speaking with experts from the Central Coast housing and real estate industry about how the global pandemic could reshape the U.S. real estate industry. We encourage you to participate by sending us your questions for today's guests by email to voices@kcbx.org, or you can call them into us at 805-549-8855. I'll turn it over to you, Fred.
Thank you, Sarah. Glad to be with you today. Glad you could join us for the program. And we will do our best to make sure that you can be part of this discussion. You can give us a call at 805-549-8855, or also you can email at voices@kcbx.org. As Sarah said, our goal is to really present you with valid and incredible information about things going on in our community. This is obviously a time of great change, and I guess we're all off balance for a number of reasons, but we still are fighting and looking at the global pandemic of COVID-19. We have not had a chance yet to discuss how this topic affects our housing and our real estate markets, because there's so much that has gone on. It may be a factor that comes to look at us and slap us around for quite a while after this, but we want to really have a discussion about how this may affect us on the Central Coast and how it affect the national economy as we look at ways to conquer what we're dealing with COVID-19. I'm joined today by a panel of guests with really diverse backgrounds and a diverse set of observations about this. Mary Trudeau is the division manager for the San Luis Obispo Office of the Mortgage House. Chris Richardson is president of Richardson's Properties, a San Luis Obispo independent real estate brokerage. Lindy Hatcher, is the executive director of the Home Builders Association of the Central Coast. We want to take a look at how the global pandemic has possibly reshaped how we deal with housing, how we deal with purchasing housing, how we deal with building housing, because it really has affected many areas of our economy that, because if you happen to be sheltering at home or only limiting your travel, you may not be seeing things around you that you're used to looking at. You may be used to looking at construction going on in areas. You may be looking at the movement of materials for real estate operations and things like that. And in some cases, we just are not clear as to how we're going to get through this. The pandemic has affected everybody. I suspect it's affected people in the real estate industry. Chris, why don't I start with you, since I believe probably the most frontline person dealing with the average home buyer, home seller, or somebody looking for a new place to live, which may involve a rental, is going to be a real estate broker. What are you seeing going on, and what have you lived through in the last 6 months?
Thank you. First of all, thank you for having me on the show. It's an honor to be here with you today. It has been an absolute wild ride since March, when things got really crazy and the shelter in place was put in order. I think at the outset, it was just people were sort of, there was a little bit of, I don't know if shock's the right word, but a pause. And so things just kind of stopped for a little bit of time. And one of the things that's been the hardest for us in the real estate business has been the managing the change with the legal side of it, the documentation and the changing environment and the rules and regulations. So that's from the real estate professional side, that's been a tough to manage through that. But you know, we, and I guess, first of all, the volume of activity just, you know, was cut in half. I think statewide was about 41% and the Central Coast was about 51% in terms of volume of sales activity. And that's basically like April data, because, you know, a lot of the data in March was prior, were sales prior to the shelter in place. But we were fortunate that we were able to continue to do business and to be of service to our clients, because people still had to buy and sell homes through the shelter in place. And we were very busy. I mean, granted, like I said, volume was down, but we were still very active. We were bringing out new listings during COVID. We had some examples where we listed them in the shelter in place and sold them during that and closed, you know, all in a 60-day period. So, it's, like I said, been a wild ride, but we got through it, and the market, Central Coast market, the California market, is responding well. The recent data that's coming out is showing a pretty significant uptick in sales activity. Volumes are still down, but there's a lot of activity that's happening. So there was sort of pent-up demand. Less sellers were bringing property on market during the shelter in place. So I'll end with that for now.
But that's I want to interject one thing, because my first thought when we were talking about doing this program, and my first thought looking back personally at what happened with the recession in 08, is my not being involved in the real estate market, but from a perspective of a spectator to this, it occurred to me that as you were looking at markets drop off, so there were fewer sellers, there were fewer buyers available, I suspect you also had a number of people who saw this as an incredible opportunity. If I had a property that I wanted to sell and I knew nobody else had a lot of properties on the market, but I could make it appealing enough, all of a sudden I could be talking to the people who are sitting at home looking at maybe listings on a website about things that are out there. So for everybody that was looking at it as a possible lack of opportunity, there may have been someone else who was saying, you know, people are still looking at things. They still have a life to get on with and things to think about. And in some cases, after a month or two in the house I'm in right now, I might be thinking, gee, it's really time to be someplace else. So I'm wondering if you saw much activity in that regard.
Oh, absolutely. You hit on two great points. I mean, and we were having a lot of these conversations with our clients about the fact that there's, you know, 40 to 50% less volume happening, and new listings were down significantly. So there was, in essence, there was less competition. Now there were also less buyers that were out and active, but so it was a good time to be out there, because the buyers that were out in the market, they were real, and they had strong motivation to transact. And so that's why sales continued to happen. And then the second point you raised is, I think it's a really great topic, is that the home has changed for people, the way that we use it. It's become a gym. It's become an office. It's become a place where you need to hold school lessons, and you need outdoor space to get outside and have the dogs and the pets need to have places. So I think people are really looking hard and maybe reevaluating. And in some cases, they're doing some enhancements to their home, or maybe they realized, wow, this place just doesn't really work for us. And so that's causing us, I think, some interesting conversations and some movement. So you hit on two great points, and that's what we're seeing in the market. Absolutely.
Yeah. Lindy, I wanted to focus on, we may want to get an explanation from you as to what the Home Builders Association is. I realize the name is a brief synopsis of what you do, but it's probably far broader in that regard than that. Give us an idea of the background of the Home Builders Association.
Sure. The Home Builders Association was established about 30 years ago. And what we do is we promote building houses and residential structures in the state of California, and specifically along the Central Coast.
And that is, I think, for a lot of people, when the shelter in place first became a factor in what we're doing, I suspect home building either, but got ratcheted down quite a bit, because I'm not quite sure how you consider that or don't consider this an essential industry. But the flip side is, if I'm out as a construction worker, there's a lot to be said for my ability to stay 6 feet apart from my peers. So how did the home building industry address that?
So what we did, we were very fortunate to have good leadership in the Home Builders Association of the Central Coast and the California Building Industry Association. So when the first order came down from the governor in March, the housing industry was not considered essential. And within 24 hours, CBIA was on that, getting residential construction added to the order, shelter-in-place order, as an essential business. And not only the home builders, but all of the other essential businesses that supply and take part in the building chain. I mean, for example, the home building industry as a whole consists of more than just builders. I mean, we have the architects and the planners and the trades and subcontractors, electricians, plumbers, roofers, all those folks working. And they were able to have the trades work in the homes at specific times, so they could socially distance. And a lot of the trades wear masks anyway for dust and what they do requires masks. So that wasn't a huge issue for us as it was for some other industries. But as part of our industry, we also have to think about who else is included in the building industry. And that includes realtors and model homes being open. So when model homes were closed, that presented a huge problem with the potential sales of homes. And when sales stop, production stops. So you're looking at a larger scale recession when that happens. And keeping the building industry going not only employs the builders and the subs, it also works for the bankers and realtors and everyone else involved in selling a home and producing a home. So we were very happy to have our model homes back open by appointment only, and in the middle of the pandemic. The housing sales and the building got a little behind in some areas, basically because you could only have one set of subs in at a time. But all in all, we realized some efficiencies you know, not everyone needs to come to the office for a morning meeting. It can be done virtually, and that saves time, and time is money in our industry.
Yeah, you bring up some very good points, and we'll switch gears a little bit and talk to Mary Trudeau from the Mortgage House. Mary, you with us?
I'm okay. Here.
Yeah, sorry, I realize because we're doing this in a number of different formats, and I'm sorry because I can't see you. I wanted to make sure. I suspect for some people, this may have been seen as I can't walk into my mortgage broker's office and I need to sign papers in person. So it was I'm not going to bother now. But for other people, I would think from a standpoint of, if nobody is writing new mortgages right now and there aren't a lot of people refinancing because of shelter in place, isn't this a really opportune time to maybe call my mortgage broker? I have to confess, I didn't call you and specifically ask to refinance my house because I had done it within a couple of years. But I suspect that is a key factor. So an opportunity is there as much as a roadblock for a lot of people. How did you folks address that?
You know, it's funny because we have always been primarily, as a mortgage banker, primarily a purchase money lender. But, you know, we also do refinances. And during this pandemic and this shelter in place, the shift was to much more refinance. And because of the rates continuing to stay low and drop. And, you know, obviously bad news is good news in the mortgage industry a lot of times, because stock market, when it starts to slow down a little bit, people run to bonds, and bonds affect mortgage rates. And so, you know, it's kept the rates down. It's not the same as it used to be. It used to be I could say, yes, you know, today the stock market's down a little bit, the bond market's, you know, trading, and so rates are going to improve. But nowadays it's kind of fickle. It's hard to say. And because we do, rates are live now. So, you know, rates can change second to second. And, you know, in these pricing engines, it's automatic. So when the rates change, they change within the system. So we've shifted to refinances, and we've gotten, you know, really, really busy with refinances. But then, you know, I'm noticing and I'm reading that, you know, that there's a huge rebound in purchase. Chris kind of addressed this. In the purchase market, people are starting to go ahead and list, and, you know, they're starting to, the purchase market is recovering, and we're seeing that as well. You know, we have such an ability in this, in the real estate industry to adapt. And with us having gone digitally and paperless years ago, oftentimes I don't ever even meet my clients in person. A lot of it is just, you know, online, telephone, and they upload everything into the portal, they apply online. So it's not unusual that I won't ever meet them in person. You know, I mean, we still have a personal relationship by phone, and email, but, you know, and text. But, you know, it's not unusual to not meet somebody. So, yes, the purchase market is starting to pick back up, but the refi market has been very, very busy.
Okay. Chris, have you found a lot of people that maybe in early March and into April were saying, well, we have no idea how long this is going to go on. So in their mind, it's, I'll think about this in July. And now that we're to June and we realize we don't have an exit strategy from a health standpoint that's as far along as any of us would like it to be, I suspect you have an interesting balancing act. And from my perspective, the balancing act you have is someone who is looking at fewer buyers in the market might be feeling like their ability to sell a piece of property at the value that they want to get for it may be down. But the flip side is you may be getting new buyers that are looking at things because a house that used to be $600,000 all of a sudden is on the market at $560,000. They had thought about this the last time it sold 3 years ago. This may not be the best word for it, but people troll for things that fit in their price range in any kind of commodities market. I'm wondering if that's becoming a factor for buyers who are then saying, gee, where are the properties I want to consider buying because there aren't enough sellers on the market?
Well, we certainly had a lot of conversations with buyers thinking that maybe there was a real opportunistic event happening and that they could get a discount, but we just didn't see that in the market. We had the opportunity to have Leslie Appleton-Young, who's the CAR chief economist, speak to our office. We have an operation in Manhattan Beach as well, and she spoke this morning to them. And her numbers, her data says that the Central Coast market is pricing, from a pricing standpoint, has softened about 2.5% or 3%, and so, which is somewhat negligible. And it'll be interesting to see where we go from here. All indications are that prices have, you know, there was really no discounting, virtually none. So I think at the outset, there were some buyers that thought that they could come in and get a COVID discount, and we just didn't see it. The reality is the Central Coast is an amazing part of California, and there's strong demand from North and South metros. There's strong demand from the Central Coast, and that hasn't changed. And so our message to our clients was, hey, you know, if they were motivated and had a reason to sell, I had some clients that were relocating for a job in San Diego. We listed, sold, and closed their home during the shelter in place. And there were some conversations at the outset, but we had great activity. This is an over $1 million home in San Luis Obispo. So the market functioned really well. I mean, that's not to say there weren't hiccups and there weren't things that caused you to pause and there was a ton of change. And in Mary's world, the interest rates were bouncing around for a while, and then the federal government came in and settled that down. And I think that's a huge point, is that the interest rates are in such phenomenally low or incredibly low place that that's helping the market. So all of the government, the work the federal government did with the CARES Act and then stabilizing the mortgage markets really helped stabilize the real estate market. So it really functioned, I'd say, fairly well during this throughout the whole shelter in place.
Yeah. Lindy, that brings me to another side of this. And I was trying to look back and think back over the last about year to 18 months. It seems to me, without any statistical backup to this, but just as an observer, that we have seen a lot of new construction get initiated, a lot of new projects that have been being looked at. That a lot of it started in winter and spring of 19. I live in Atascadero. Within about 2 miles of me, there is a project of both a combination of rental housing and condos that we were startled to see actually get off the ground. They started moving dirt there, I think, in about October or November, that we never thought was going to be a project that would be in the market. Because we're looking at an issue of not only purchasable property for people who want to own a home or a condo, but we're looking at the fact that the rental market in this county has made it really tough. I think some new people have moved into the area of building in the rental market. What are you seeing with that?
We have a couple of builders that do build and rent their properties. Z Villages is one, and Household Builders is another in the southern part of the county. It's just a matter of preference. Most of our builders don't build and hold. They build and sell. They're production builders. So I can't really comment on the effects of renting in the building industry, other than all of the issues with folks having the ability to delay their payments can wreak some havoc with the developers. To me, that has to be decided, and we can't have people kicked out of their homes that can't afford them, but we also can't have people not paying their rent that's due and living for free while the builder has to pay their mortgage. So there's some balance needed there.
Yeah, there's been a discussion in the media here about the fact that a lot of people lose track of the fact that a good portion of the rentals in our communities are basically with people who own two or three rental units in San Luis Obispo, in Atascadero, and in Arroyo Grande. I know of incidences there where you're not talking about a person who is a holder of a lot of real estate. You're talking about someone who may have one long-term retirement investment or two or three of them in real estate. So they still have to make their mortgage payment even in a bad economy. Mm-hmm. How many things do you see? Bad choice of words. How many projects do you see out there that are either in planning stages or already under construction that we put in the category as designed for first-time home buyers? Because my hunch is, if there's things that are being designed for first-time home buyers, then we're also going to look at hopefully some rentals that will become available when those things actually get purchased, and/or in some cases we'll look at new move-ins to the area. So I think this may be a question for both Lindy and for Chris as to how you balance that part of what's going on.
So a lot of the building you're seeing is building that was approved but never started years ago. So you might see, you know, thousands of new houses going up, but this is the way that it works to get everything approved and to actually start moving dirt is a process, sometimes 12, 15 years in the making. And a lot of the recent building you're seeing are from plans approved in the past. So I just want to point that out. We've never actually met our 1% growth rate in Slo County, although it appears we have because you're seeing a lot of projects off the ground now.
I'm glad you, Linda, you mentioned that because that's a fantastic point. I mean, the certainly we're seeing more residential home development and construction than we have in years past. But as Lindy said, that's been decades in the making to get those mm-hmm. projects approved. So it's important that they were able to maintain their sales operations and to proceed with construction because it's housing of all types that our community, in my opinion, desperately needs.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think if you want more housing, there's a couple of other things that are factors. We have RENA numbers to meet for the state. We also have a housing crisis right now, and our industry can help. We also have a pandemic going on. Our industry can help bring out of economic depression and get people back to work. So the building industry tends to get strangled, I would say, with regulations and unfunded mandates. And I don't know if all of your listeners are aware, but a third of the price of the house is fees and regulations and just mandates that are made before you even stick the shovel in the ground or the bulldozer. One third of the price of the house is fees.
Yeah. Mary, I wanted to jump in because as listening to Lindy and Chris mention this, it occurred to me that for some people, at least the wise pre-planners, this may be a time at which you get the phone call which says, gee, I've never bought a house before and I can't quite figure out what my market is and what I can afford. My hunch is in a lot of cases, you and your staff are one of the people who get those first calls. Have you seen a spike in that because of the economy right now?
Yeah, there's a lot of people calling that are unsure of, you know, they're just going back to work. You know, they may have been furloughed for a little while, so they're just going back to work. And they're concerned, you know, how is that going to impact, you know, being able to purchase a home? The guidelines have changed. I mean, honestly, we are, you know, we're documenting their jobs right up to the last moment and, you know, confirming that they're back at work and they're going to be able to stay at work. A lot of people took the opportunity to go into forbearance on their mortgages if they had a mortgage. Or they're not paying their rent. And so if we try to verify that information, they have to come back out of forbearance and catch up, or we can't lend to them. So there's a lot of, you know, moving parts right now that are different, but there are a lot of people that are taking a look, you know, maybe like Chris said, at opportunistic type of look at buying, thinking that the values might be lower, but then realizing that they really aren't, you know, selling for lower or purchase prices aren't really lower, you know, but at least they are getting themselves lined up to purchase. You know, they're starting to think about it now. This is a, you know, an opportunity for them. They're thinking about it and then, you know, getting qualified to the into their price range and, you know, finding out what they need to do, get out of forbearance or, you know, get back to work or what they can do to buy a house in this environment. I was going to say, based on what Chris had talked about, there was a house in my neighborhood. I live over by the Irish Hills area, and there was a house that went up on the market right as, you know, everything shut down and shelter in place. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, how is this going to work? You know, and everything obviously is always unfolding, but boy, that house, the sign went up that tent went on the house and the sign came down. It was, you know, 45 days maximum from the time the sign went up to it came down. So, you know, obviously we adapt and get creative and it, you know, it works.
Yeah. Thank you.
And Fred, can I jump in really quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
So we're seeing some interest in folks wanting to leave the San Francisco and LA areas and move to the Central Coast. And we think that it might be sort of a rural sprawl based on the pandemic and effects in New York City with everyone living on top of each other, and in Seattle that they might just want to get out rural. I mean, if they can work from home now, a lot of people are able to do that and will continue working from home. That's something that they don't have to be in the big city anymore. And we're seeing some spiked interest in our industry for that. Yeah.
We'll talk about that some more in a moment. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to let Sarah remind you as to who we are and why we're here. We'll be back with you shortly. This is Central Coast Voices.
Thanks for tuning in for Central Coast Voices. If you have questions you want to have answered, you can send them in to us at voices@kcbx.org or call them into us at 805-549-8855. Fred, back to you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sarah. Glad you're all joining us today. One of the things that I think we kind of left it with, and that was Lindy was talking about a very important topic, and that is that because the Central Coast has been so expensive for people to move to, that maybe we're seeing people who are looking at this market as more available to them. I'm wondering, are you seeing that in the kind of inquiries about new projects you're getting? Are you seeing that also from developers? How is that manifesting itself for the home builders?
We're hearing that from our builders. Folks are contacting them, and they're from out of town and mainly in San Francisco and L.A.
Okay. And so this is a kind of things you had not heard for a while. Chris, are you hearing from this? People are wondering, gee, is the market softer in an area I've always dreamed of moving to?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, as I said earlier, we typically see demand from San Francisco area, Los Angeles, and the Central Valley. And I think I haven't seen any real big shifts in that, but I think people are considering making the move to the Central Coast. If they have their eye on it, they might speed up that timeline a little bit based on the ability to continue to work, you know, with the tools that we've used during the shelter in place, Zoom and everything else. So, yeah, I think we'll continue to see that kind of demand. One thing that we're also seeing is that there is some increased demand for high-end rentals. So people that were going to do Hawaii or Europe or, you know, the big summer vacation, obviously they've kind of shelved that, and they're looking for something that's more of a, not quite a staycation, but something more local. And so we've seen a quite a bit more demand on the rental side for homes, so people can bring their family and spend some time together in an environment where they feel safe. And so that's been something that's been kind of interesting. We've seen that both in the Central Coast, and then we're in Manhattan and Hermosa Beach. We've seen it down there as well. And I'm hearing about that in other places throughout the state and the nation that are more rural.
Yeah. You bring a good balance into that, because you talk about the fact that you also have an operation down in the South Coast. Are you seeing a difference in In where prices are staying in both of those environments? Are they staying pretty consistent around the state?
Yeah. I mean, statewide and certainly coastal California has not seen, if there's been a little softening, it's been negligible. And it, you really have to kind of drill down and, you know, look at where, and some places are up. So on the coast, but prices haven't softened. I mean, we just haven't seen that.
Yeah. Mary, I want to shift to a topic that even though it's not fun to talk about, is a reality we probably need to look at, and that is, what are you seeing happening with foreclosures? Obviously, there's been a lot of employment situations that have not gone well for people. I don't know how it is in the county specifically in an area where people are already homeowners, but are you seeing either foreclosures and or an effort and a new way to try and to curtail foreclosures?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've learned a lot from the Great Recession. And so lenders, you know, they jumped on this really quickly, investors, and they are, you know, working with people, the forbearance, so that they can tack that on to the end of their loan so that they don't have to come out of forbearance and catch up necessarily. But it can be tacked onto the end of the loan at the end of the 30 years or whatever's left on their loan. And so that, you know, they can hang on to their home, and that can be, there's talk of it being as long as a year of forbearance, and then just tack that again onto the end to prevent, you know, the same type of, you know, crisis that we went through. So,
Mary, can I ask you a question about that? The forbearance was made so easy by, you know, Wells in particular and others, which I think was a good move. I think people at the outset, I had some clients that probably didn't need to, but it was basically a click of a button and they moved into forbearance. And so I think it's might be helpful to people listening. I mean, if you were in a situation where you didn't really need it, but you did it because you weren't sure how this was going to go, you may want to revisit that, because there are some ramifications. I think the fact that they made it so easy was great on one hand, but I think that there's going to be some ramifications for people that they didn't anticipate that probably will say, geez, I don't know why I did that. I didn't really need it after all. So I don't know if you're seeing that and have had those. I'm sure you've had those conversations with your clients.
Yes.
I just wanted.
It's the opportunistic type of forbearance. I mean, that's what
right.
You're calling it. And so a lot of people, Wells Fargo and Chase and various investors had contacted them, sent them a little letter or something that said, you know, or even phone calls, but mostly via mail, that was offering the forbearance. And so people just thought, okay, you know, then I have a little extra money in my pocket, you know, I can, you know, use it for home improvements or whatever, not realizing that, you know, if they want to, you know, get a loan or do something else, that might affect, even though when they make the offer, they're saying it's not going to show up as a late on your credit or anything like that, which is true. But you cannot be in forbearance on a mortgage and go get a new loan, at least not a mortgage. So that's where, and even forbearance on student loans, that affects the ability to refinance or purchase, as far as Fannie Freddie guidelines, probably as well as jumbo guidelines. So that is a concern. But what we've been doing is we go to them and we say, you need to not, because a lot of them went into forbearance but continued to make their payments. So they just had it, they wanted to have it there ready just in case, but they continued to make their payment because they didn't need it. So those people, it's really easy. We just say, you know, take it out of forbearance, you're current. The ones that might want to refinance that also didn't make a payment, then they now have to catch up. And they can't do it in one lump sum. They have to do it in, they can't do it with the refinance or with, you know, the money to close. They have to bring in the cash to do it and pay up, catch the mortgage up before they can, apply or finish the loan.
Yeah. Mary, I have one side question, and you may be able to answer this, and Chris may know the answer also. And that is, are there people who weren't aware this was available to them, or did enough major lenders look at what the status of loans were to make sure that nobody was heading towards foreclosure without realizing that they had some safety nets for them?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Chris might be able to address this as well, but I know that a lot of lenders, I think probably all lenders, have sent out some sort of a in the statement, sent some sort of a letter. I got a letter. I do all my bills online, so I don't get any actual mail statements, but I did get a letter from my lender on my primary residence. I don't think I got one on my rental, but you know, for exactly that, that said, you know, you know, if you need it, the forbearance is there. So I think it's being sent out for the most part by most investors. It is necessary. People should know. I know that if they're late on their payment, then I'm sure that that's when a lender would reach out and say, you know, we want to work with you and help you, and here's how we can do it. So
yeah, I wasn't sure if there might be some legal reason why you were not allowed to be proactive about that and just wait for the borrower. But it's good to hear that you can pretty much monitor what's out there and be proactive with your customers from that standpoint. We do have a couple of questions that came in by email from Mike, a listener, who I believe is probably in, I'm not quite sure where he is based on his phone number, but anyway, this is probably focused toward Lindy. He wants to mention the fact, and I think this is a valid question, certainly, is that it seems like home builders are still building a lot of larger single family homes, which is making it more difficult to see more affordable housing happening. I'm wondering if that's a balancing act that you can address, and how do your members see that?
It's a supply and demand issues. Our builders build what our population wants. We also contribute to affordable housing in a variety of different ways. If anyone builds a house over 2,200 square foot, they're paying a tax on that to help contribute to affordable housing. And that's something that's going on. And builders also give up part of their property to build affordable housing in some of their projects. So I don't think that one precludes the other. We need housing of all types. If you look at the RENA numbers, the state came down and said, you need this many market rate houses, you need this many affordable houses, and every house built removes a person from homelessness or not being able to afford a rent because someone else steps up and buys that house. And also, they're building more housing for the workforce. So if you're bringing in employees from out of town, like the HBA brought me in a year ago, I'm looking for housing and I'm seeing what's out there and where I want to live and how traffic affects that. And, you know, it's kind of a wait and see where I want to end up. And I think people choose what type of house they want, and builders build based on demand.
Okay.
Fred, can I
go ahead,
add
Chris,
on that? I was involved in the group that got the Avila Ranch project approved, and we work with a lot of home builders and land developers. And Lindy mentioned it earlier. I mean, she touched on the fee structure. So when you look at when a developer looks at buying property, and they look at the fees and the price of the land and construction costs, which have been appreciating at a fairly high rate, it's nearly impossible for them to acquire property, pay the fees, build the homes, and sell them. When you get into the smaller, more affordable product, it's just these builders are a for-profit company, and the numbers, I was looking at a project in San Luis the other day, and they had some small units in it, and we figured out that by the time you build them, you're losing money per unit on those, so you can't build them based on all the inputs, the land, the fees, and the construction costs. So it's really challenging. Projects like Avila Ranch and San Luis Ranch have tried to, as best they can, to design in some workforce housing that Lindy mentioned, and, you know, smaller lot, smaller product, but it's very challenging with the, in the state of California, with the fee structure and the prices of land and the construction costs. So that's why your tent, that and the market forces, like Lindy said, is why you're seeing more of the product that's, you know, in San Luis proper, it's primarily for single family, it's probably 750, 725 and up.
Okay. Good point. Thank you. Lindy, the another question from the same listener was, can you define what you classify as unfunded mandates from the state that are affecting your industry?
Sure. Thank you for asking that. So if a builder submits their plans, they have to now put in solar, which is about $10,000. Like the new projects going up in the San Luis Ranch and Avila Ranch area, they now, if someone wants gas, they have to retrofit that for all electric, because the city of SLO is the city council just approved it. It has to be ratified by the CEC, but those are added costs to the price of a house. Now we're looking at vehicle miles traveled. There's a new system coming in July 1st where it'll tax you if you drive further to work. Well, who lives further from work? Some people choose to live out in the countryside and they can afford that. But a lot of people that don't live close to their job live there because they have to live there, because that's where the housing is affordable. So to tax those people that can't afford to live anywhere else and increase the price of that house, you're working in silos here. Yes, we all care about vehicle miles traveled, and we all care about affordable housing and market rate housing and more production. So we really have to look at what we mandate, and this is like top down. If a project checks all the boxes, I'm going to take it a step further. We need to streamline the approval processes, and you can't have a bunch of whims. We want all the curbs fixed all the way down the line here. We want you to do it on your project. And yeah, great that you put a bike path in your project, but now we want an adjacent bike path so people can connect to it. Well, that's not part of that project. So adding all those costs to it adds costs to the affordability of the house. And that's something that people may not even realize that that's happening unless they're in the industry. So time is money. So if you get a project that checks all the boxes, then all of a sudden someone comes in with a whim, we want an art sculpture here. Well, then, you know, then you have to go back to the drawing board and resubmit. And it's like, it's a time is money. It costs money to hold on to those loans. And people don't realize that all that is passed on to the home buyer. I mean, the builder's not going to shoulder that and keep it. They wouldn't make any money. They'd be, you know, a nonprofit builder if that happened. And we do have nonprofit builders out there that specifically work on building affordable housing, and they have 9 different funds from the state that they can pull money and match from. So that's something that's their specialty, and that's what they do, and we applaud that.
Good point. Thank you. And just as an aside from an observer in this, I would say, regardless of how one politically or economically thinks about that, when we have a crisis like the pandemic we're in right now, I don't think anybody's not hurting from what the cuts in the economy are and the things that Chris and Mary have talked about already. Chris, we've got about a minute and a half before we start to wrap up here. I noticed something in some of your notes that I was curious about, and don't worry, it's not that big a deal, but I mean, you mentioned technology a lot. So I'm not sure if you have been somebody who is focused on using technology for home sales for a long time. Mary talked about the technology available in the mortgage industry and the number of things that can be done electronically. But as I looked at some of your notes, it's like, gee, there's a recurring theme that you have actually found that technology has really helped you in this pandemic time and the ability for people having to shelter in place. What is your observation on that?
Well, you know, there's so much, I'll call it noise and art in the real estate industry about technology. There's been companies that have been funded and come into the marketplace based on technology. At the end of the day, our business, I think for all of us on this call, it's about, you know, helping people and connecting with people and helping them work through the process of buying a home and financing a home, or if it's in Lindy's case, you know, helping a builder work within the community to get a project approved. So so I want to make that point that this, the business that we're in, is a people business. I always say the home is the widget that trades at the end. We're in a people business, and technology has, you know, it gets focused on, I think, hyperactively. Technology has been out there. We all have access to amazing technology. Take Zoom, for example. That's been sitting there for years, and, you know, maybe we used it once or twice, and now we're on it four or five times a day. Great technology. And, you know, so there's a lot of technological or technology tools out there that can help us do business and do it remotely. And so that I think is what I was alluding to in the notes, but,
Well, good.
So, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Mary, as all of my listeners regularly know, I try and get out of the way for at least a couple of minutes a person at the end of the program, so you don't get my two cents that really has no place in the equation sometimes. So Mary, let's start with you. What do you want to make sure that our listeners take away from talking with us today, that you can help them remember, that'll help this process be better for them?
I guess the takeaway I'd like them to have is that, you know, we are able to, because of technology and adaptability, we are able to, you know, still finance a home loan. You do have to qualify, but we are still closing loans in 30 to 45 days. And we want to help, just like Chris said, we want to help people still purchase a home or refinance their home and get a better interest rate. Relocate from the Bay Area here now that they can work remotely, or from LA to here. So the takeaway is, it's, we are still doing business. We can still do business. And we can still, you know, have home ownership, and it's not as complicated or as difficult, but to call, you know, call Chris, call me, if, you know, call your realtor, call your lender. And, you know, if you want to refinance or you want to purchase, you can. I mean, it's still out there, and it's still, and we, you know, we all want to work with you. And it's an ever-changing industry, but it always will be. I mean, this is just another little moment in time where we're learning how to do things a little differently.
Good. Thank you very much. Lindy, give us your best understanding of what you're doing and why.
We are trying to build more homes and quality homes that that the public wants. And we believe that it takes a village. It takes the regulators to approve things, and it takes the lawmakers and elected to make good policies. And it also takes more than just shouldering things on the back of builders. Like infrastructure, there's about to be a lot of money coming down from the feds for infrastructure. And this is an opportunity for the cities and the county to get a head start on that infrastructure and, you know, redo those curbs you want redone and put that traffic light in and really make these efforts. You need bigger sewer pipes for more housing. Okay, do it. Don't shoulder it on the back of the builder. That's where you can do your part to make housing, because together we can make more housing available for all. And together we can bring an economy out of recession. I mean, we can help resolve societal issues like the housing crisis and economic crisis and unemployment working together. And that's the whole thing.
Good point. Thank you very much. Chris, I don't know a realtor that doesn't like to have the last word. So you're on.
It was hard. It's hard to sit here and wait. I want to talk. And so, yeah, you're right. No, but it's been a pleasure to be on your show, Fred. Thank you. And Mary and Lindy, to be on the show with you has been a lot of fun to have this conversation. I think, you know, a couple couple things that come to mind. I really believe that the housing real estate industry is going to be one of the leaders to bring us out of this downturn that we've run into with the pandemic. So I think housing is going to lead the way on the recovery. As I touched on earlier, I think it's been really fascinating to see how people are rethinking and repurposing and re-envisioning and their home and how they use it and what they need it to, how they need it to work for them. So I think that's going to create some real fun conversations and lead to people moving around and redoing their homes. And then lastly, I think that, you know, we're certainly talking about residential real estate. The commercial world is a completely different impact. And I think one of the opportunities that'll come out of this, I think there's going to be some really creative rezoning opportunities on, you know, historically commercial retail or commercial office that might lead to some opportunities for residential in areas that we might not have seen it before with all of the change that's happening. So I'd keep an eye on that. I think there's some real opportunities to address some of these housing issues and repurpose some commercial spaces and find some residential uses. So those are the things I'd like to end with and leave with the listeners.
Yeah, I see. Good point. You actually you leave that to a chance to have another show just talking about maybe mixed use situations in the future. So it's a good one to go with. Mary, you had something you wanted to.
Yeah, I wanted to, talking about commercial, and I wanted to do a little commercial. We are now celebrating 25 years in business here in San Luis Obispo, working with our community. And so I wanted to mention that. And I also wanted to say that we are in the process of moving into a new commercial property. And so the mortgage house is moving for our 25-year anniversary over one block from where we are now currently. And so that's very exciting. And since I had this chance to announce this, I thought I would just jump in and do it.
Okay. Thank you for doing that. This is Central Coast Voices, and I thank my guests, and I'll get into thank yous about them in a few moments. I want to remind you that Chris Kington Barker will be with you next week. She's hosting the program from home, just like I am during the COVID epidemic, and shelter in place when we can. She's been looking at what it really means to defund police and refund other organizations in the community. She's going to be speaking with Katie Granger with the Race Matters Slow and Sister Teresa Harpin, who's the executive director of Restorative Partners, and Michael Kaplan, who's community engagement director with Transitions Mental Health Association. They're going to discuss how to realign society's priorities through both funding and community responsibilities that may make it a more positive space for all of us to live in. That'll be next week's program. Join Chris. Want to remind you that Central Coast Voices is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. Thank you again to our underwriter, Joan Gellert Sargent, for her many years of underwriting the program. You can reach us with other questions and comments at voices@kcbx.org. And I want to thank Mary Trudeau, Chris Richardson, and Lindy Hatcher for a wonderful program and a wonderful discussion. This has been Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining us today. And next up is my favorite KCBX program, This American Life. I'll be back with you in 2 weeks. This has been Central Coast Voices.
Thanks for tuning in for Central Coast Voices. This show will be available to listen to later today on our website, kcbx.org. You can hear any of our local shows anytime and stream on demand from kcbx.org. Find us on social media. We're at KCBX FM.